How's it going, everybody? My name's Dion Morales, your host of the Gold Squadron Podcast, and you're listening and watching to episode 155. Dion, you changed the intro. It's okay. We're going to be okay. Today, I'm joined by Marcel, 3428B2Y15I, Manzano.
And I am freaked out by the change of intro here. I don't know what to do.
Did I get you?
Yeah. It's creepy.
Will, when in Rome, we do as Dengar do. Hagwood.
I'm sorry, go on. Oh, sorry, I haven't heard that expression before.
And Ryan, one-armed Stanazuski.
Because my cat is currently taking the other one.
You've been occupied.
Yep.
Well, I'm super excited to have a great time today. Today we're going to be talking about the Space Jam, of course, that happened this last weekend, which if you missed it, man, you missed a good time. If you were playing in it, thank you, but let's just jump into it. By the way, Australian Space Jam, all right, that event, tickets for that are going to be going on sale at some point this week. I'm not going to reveal the exact time and date yet because I'm going to reveal it to Australian players first so they have a little bit of time to be able to get their tickets first, prioritize the Australians, and then after that I'll be like, hey, tickets are open, and then you guys can all freak out and jump on it. All right, so that should be fun there. This, not this weekend, but the following weekend, we have our LA Space Jam event. So those of you who are playing, awesome. If you're on the wait list, hey, don't give up hope. I've already actually told a couple people from the wait list that they can play, so never give up hope there. And this upcoming weekend, going to be doing something new. I'm going to be building the Resistance A-Wing Legos, that Lego set collector's edition, on stream for you guys. We're going to do a little AMA. We're going to give some stuff away, something new. So GSP Lego stream coming your way. If you don't know what I'm talking about, I'll see if I can get a quick picture of it here so that you guys can see it. This set right here. All right, so that's the plan. So watch live on, it's going to be Saturday. We're going to start it, I believe the plan is to do it at 8:30 p.m. Central is when we'll start. And, you know, we'll take a couple hours, hang out, and do that. Should be fun. But let's go ahead, and we're going to jump straight into the Space Jam. Let me start by just asking Will, Marcel, and Ryan, like, I know that you guys, obviously you guys weren't playing. How much did you guys, were you able to watch and pay attention to the event this weekend?
I was able to watch quite a bit of it. Didn't have a lot going on, so I was able to stay up late. I think the first day I didn't get much games in because I had to pass out early. But no, I was able to watch most of the cut.
Cool. What about you, Ryan?
I got very little of it overall. Although I did get a funny message in the morning because one of my local buddies was like, oh, my alarm was set for 2:30 p.m., not a.m. So that may have been one of the guys that didn't make it in time.
Was that Mark?
Mark Robert, yep.
Wrecked so hard. I made charts and everything. There was a timer. There was everything. We had it all.
Well, yeah, he just did the wrong AM-PM issue.
So sad. So sad. And what about you, Marcel?
I think I caught the last two rounds of Swiss. Mm-hmm. Rounds 5 and 6? And then I was up for the cut at, like, what was that, 3 a.m.? So I actually watched the cut all the way up until the final, and I fell asleep, like, right before the final. So I saw when Ali won the semifinal, but I missed the final altogether.
All right. Well, we'll get to talk about it a little bit. One of the things that people always like to talk about when it comes to these events is the meta, right? Which is what we're going to talk about today. Now, unfortunately, because I'm weird in time zones, I had a bunch of work to do, I didn't get to break this down as much as we did last time. But what we do have is our faction rankings. So our top 8 in each faction. And what I like to do is is we take the rankings and get a rank average per faction. And then also talk about the faction representation. Now, before I actually give you guys that information, let's have a little bit of fun with this, okay? So, maybe, unless you guys, of course, are looking at it, it's a little hard to guess. But what faction, Ryan, would you say was the least represented at Rome?
Probably First Order.
All right, what would you say, Will? Let's have some fun with it.
Rebel?
And Marcel?
Would be my guess.
And Marcel?
Probably Separatist.
That is correct. Okay. There were only a total of 11 Separatists. That's 7 and about 0.5% of the field was Separatists. And it unfortunately did, even though there were only 11 of them, you think like, oh, maybe those people did really, really well. They didn't. They didn't. Their overall rank, if you just take the top 8 from just Separatists, was 48. And that is second to worst to the Republic. The Republic was the second to worst faction for the top 8. You had to go all the way to 86th place out of 148 to get that last top 8 person. And there was only 18 of those. Pretty rough. But one of the trends that I found...
Go ahead. I'm trying to understand the way you're breaking it down. So explain again the first one is how many people flew it, but what was the second stat that you're giving?
The second stat I'm giving is, so for instance, I'll actually bring it up on screen so that it makes sense to everybody so we can look at it together. I'm on the wrong button. Here's my button. Okay. So here, let's make sure we go to Rome. So here is Space Jam Rome. And we have the Scum and Villainy faction right here. So Cuba S is not, mind you, this is just Swiss. This wasn't including the cut. Just in Swiss, Cuba was first, Octa was second, Timo was third. So our first, second, and third were all Scum players. Then you go 5th, 9th, 17th, 18th, and 27th. So what I did, you take those numbers and you average them out. You say your average rank, because you're just taking that top representation of the faction, was 10.25, which is amazing. Absolutely amazing ranking there. Just the strongest showing. And the only faction that showed just a smidge better was the Empire with 12.375. But one of the trends that we did see here compared to Chicago, we did see actually a slight drop in Empire and bigger representation in Scum. What do you guys think would be the reason for that? I know that in Space Jam, Chicago, we had some pretty strong Scum representation. What do you guys think?
Boba. besides Octor, was anyone else in that Scum section there not taking Boba?
Let me go ahead and we can pull up the list juggler here, which I have. Let me go ahead and grab it. Sorry for the delay, stalling.
Yeah, I guess I'm putting you on the spot with this question.
It's all right. No, I was supposed to have it up and I did not. So here we go. So we have here Boba Fett. Not Boba Fett. Boba Fett. Boba Fett. And the next Scum is Boba Fett. And the next Scum is also Boba Fett. So just like your question, were there any other Boba Fetts in the top besides Octa? And the answer is yes. Well, this one. There was one other list. There was a Captain Nim, Sol Sixa, and Old Tarak list, which was the bottom, the 8th of the top ranking Scum.
Second to the bottom actually did also have non Boba. It was 3 Tensaris, Leighton, Sarasu, and a mining guild.
Ah, okay.
That was,
sorry,
Kargan.
I was going fast there. There you go. So we had three out of 8 non Bobas. Pretty interesting there. Now, here's the question. We know, obviously, Boba Fett won it, but I think the bigger news here is the fact that Dengar, a jump master, the previous bad guy for X-Wing in first edition, makes an appearance and has a really strong performance. So Teemo was our champion. Eventually, he had Boba Fett with Fearless, Jamming Beam, Maul Crew, Proton Bombs, Contraband Cybernetics, Hull Upgrade, and Slave One. Then you had Dengar with Marksmanship, Proton Torpedoes, Auto Blasters, L337, Han Solo, and Contraband Cybernetics. Marcel, what are your thoughts on that build for Dengar?
It's really good, obviously. Won it. I've been flying that version of Dengar for a while, and even took it to a couple store championships, with the exception of Han Solo. I haven't been putting Han Solo on it. I think that probably created Han Solo and Proton Torpedo. So it's been successful, but not as successful. And the times that I've seen Dengar do well is when it's heavily loaded, even in our own local thing. When I need to get to the store more often. So I can...
Johnny,
thank you. Johnny took it also Dengar Boba and won that one at our local one too. It hits hard. It has the Contraband Cybernetics gives it a little bit more wiggle room, and the fact that Boba is there to kind of guard its rear, mm-hmm. cover its back, really makes it a really tough. Who do you target? Do you shoot at Boba, which you'll probably end up doing no damage and take forever to kill it, or do you shoot at Dengar and then have the possibility of have two proton torpedoes shot at you, because Dengar's ability does trigger with doesn't say primary. You can trigger Dengar's ability with a secondary weapon as well. I think that's obviously a super cool build, and not much you can say negatively about it. Now, actually, I'm looking at it. The auto blasters on Boba, I wonder how often that was used.
The auto blaster on Dengar?
No. Oh, it's on Dengar?
It's on Dengar.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, yeah. All right, never mind. I thought it was on Boba. I had them flipped.
No worries. Now...
And what was the... It had no bid, right? It's...
Or did it? I don't believe it did.
I can't see the points.
We can go over to this version over here.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I see it at $199, so it doesn't really have a bid, yeah.
Yeah, so 199 points. Now, here's my question. Obviously, Teemo did really well. He only had one loss throughout the entire tournament. Now, Ryan, I want to flip this question to you. If this Dengar with this Boba Fett becomes a thing, it becomes more widely used. Obviously, we have Space Jam LA coming here really soon. People can still edit their lists. Not for long, though. Get your lists in. what are maybe some strategies or things that we need to maybe look out for this Boba Fett? What are some things that it looks like it can probably do?
So when I look at that Boba and Dengar combination, it's like, to me, it just screams that you're bringing Boba and you're bringing the meanest beat stick possible, right? Like, Dengar will die in most of these games, but he's meant to make up his points in the threat he generates and what he can potentially kill. Now, he is predominantly still front arc locked. I see most of these Dengars, I believe, have contraband, so he has a better way of turning around and still getting mods. As we see, not all of them even require punishing one. As we see, Teemo doesn't even have that. He's went into the secondary weapons. So a couple things that already kind of work well against Boba in some cases and can work well against Dengar, you got to look at Separatist swarms. Make sure you bring them Discord missiles. You could look at things that don't require front arcs, because these are jousting ships, and Bulba has his rear arc as well to be really threatening. If you have more avenues of turning away, whether it's a side arc or a rear arc, RC2 A-Wings is a pretty powerful piece right now. And Dengar only has 2 agility, so those consistent 2 dice will wear him out without needing to commit to being in his front arc. You also could look at Han Solo with enough of a bid. You're looking at against only a 2-ship list. If Rebel Han Solo, if you can back him up correctly and have a higher bid than these Bulbas and Dengars, you might be able to run circles around him, still getting good mods with Han and not needing to commit to another joust, per se.
That's really true, really true. What are your thoughts, Will?
I was very interested to see I know we're talking about the finals, but there's also Dengar who made the top 4.
Mm-hmm.
And I was watching him. He ended up losing to Ali. I was like, oh man, Dengar got so far in this tournament. And the next round, I was like, oh, Dengar in the final too. But they had wildly different tactics. I think that this Dengar, because of the cannon and proton torpedoes, being able to keep that primary arc on the inside, right? Giving that 180-degree threat range of at least shooting those 2 die attacks with the primary is probably his best asset. The ones that are, punishing one, locked in the front, their time on target's going to be decreased. So I think that's very smart to widen that arc to be able to get more shots. As far as fighting it, it's going to be pretty difficult, as we see. I'm not sure how other Bulbas were even dealing with this kind of matchup there, because as Ryan put it the best, of just a big old beat stick out there, like just threatening proton torpedoes every single round. I would be interested to see. We don't really have a lot of control right now, outside of maybe some ion cannon, tractor cannons from Octa's scum M3As. But I'd be interested to see if maybe like a Sloan swarm could take this thing down. It would pretty much disable Dengar for a couple rounds to be able to sneak past him. But then you're limited on your offense. So yeah, I'll be interested to see what kind of counters people do have to this kind of Dengar.
Yeah, so looking at both, look at this other thing. So here was another Bulba companion, right? So we had 2 different Dengars, and then Boba Fett also brought Iman Azamine. Mm-hmm. Will, what's that build up?
That was Kuba's. That was Iman Azamine, who can hard 3 or 3 forward device drops. That has IG-88D for double calculating rather than the focus. I have proxy mines and proton bombs. So that could be a way to just keep slinging bombs at Dengar without actually having to shoot him. I'm sure it worked pretty good against a lot of slower ships. I saw them fighting a bunch of X1s, and just the X1s just could not do anything against those 2 fire sprays when flowing well.
No. that was a matchup for sure. Now here's the I think the obvious question. We see another event where Boba Fett, now even in extended, is doing really well. And there actually was a pseudo argument that popped up in the chat. And feel free, those of you who are in the chat, to give your opinions on this. And I want to hear each of your opinions, guys. So somebody had said that Boba Fett isn't a problem period. And then somebody asked the question, what do you mean? And they stated, well, I don't think that Boba Fett is a problem in extended. The word problem, you can make it mean what you wish. But what we are seeing is that even in the extended format, now, mind you, extended is something that had, and I think, Ryan, you had said it this way, like, it's something that hadn't really been developed very much because people were so focused on hyperspace. And by, like, Space Jam has, for a lot of people, revitalized the meta changing and the thinking about lists again for extended. Is Boba Fett a problem in extended, or have we not evolved far enough into this current extended meta?
I think somebody was talking about the. Did you ask somebody specifically? Am I jumping
in? No, just jump in. Whoever takes the bacon first.
Bacon. Bacon. What were you talking about other than breakfast?
Boba.
You know, even with like the Boba Iman and or Boba Fenn, you know, we're talking about Dengar making a showing, but really it's the powerhouse, like the carrier is Boba, because Dengar partnered with somebody else, it's not going to be as effective. Boba is the one that makes that list. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely a problem, and I think in hyperspace it's more of a problem just because you have limited options.
Right.
In extended, I don't think Boba Fett is as big of a problem as extended because you have different ways to deal with it. You have other ships available that do pretty well at hunting Boba down. We're talking about like Sunterfell does pretty well against him. And Redline with initiative does well against them. Basically, a lot of things with initiative. And in extended, you don't see the initiative bit as often. And the Bobas that end up making it to the top are typically not going that heavy on the initiative. And there's just a ton of initiative 5 and initiative ships that are available that can take away one of Boba's main strong points, which is Slave One, which is being able to choose where you end up to make sure you get either out of arc or you get into Ranger One and take advantage of that Fearless or and all those rerolls. So I just think that, well, and this is where I get stuck, because I think that it's not that big of a problem in extended, but then you see results like this where half of the cut is scum and has Boba in it. So, you know, I don't know where you end up with that. I know that it has some really bad matchups. For example, Boba hates rear arcs and hates A-wings specifically.
Yep.
Boba has a really hard time killing A-wings. And Boba also has a hard time, not as hard of a time, but also has a hard time chasing down a good TIE-SF squad that's putting out 2-2-2-2-2-2. I mean, those dice eventually fail, and Boba is usually chasing those versus the other way around. So Boba does have some, you know, some bad matchups, but I think in just a lot of people aren't bringing those matchups. You're showing resistance right now. Bartos, I don't know what Brendan was flying. I know Bartos, I think, got knocked out by Akhtar, right?
Mm-hmm. And then, so here's just kind of add fuel to this discussion is, you know, maybe are we going to see some rise in, if we continue Boba Fett being the powerhouse, even in extended, as we continue to hold these events, which I know a lot of people are talking about Slave One. We'll get to Slave One in a minute. Because I think right now it's definitely stapled, and we'll have that discussion about how good that is and if really that is a problem. We'll get to that. But let's say, as is, Boba Fett is continuing in its power. Do we see more resistance A-wings? Because to me, you already said it, Marcel, resistance A-wing seems to be an amazing tool against Boba Fett to avoid the rerolls. But even still, Boba Fett can still end up using his Slave One to find the most ideal engagement.
The optimal place to end up. Yeah.
What are you thinking, Will?
I was just doing a double check here. And I think that it's not that Boba is exactly like you know, like overpowered, or I think it's pretty powerful. But what I think that it's creating is that it's essentially pushing out any I force or lower, except in swarm situations, right? Like we have the I-1 swarms still going strong, right? Because they never cared about moving after people. They know they're moving first, right? So Octacon, William McDavid's Admiral Sloan list, that's Alpha Zan Academies, right? I'm looking through the things that aren't I-1 or A-wings in the top cut are I-3 Red Squadron experts and some the Seven Sister Fifth Brother Phantom list, because I think they're all threes and fours. Mm-hmm. I think Sigmas are the fours, right? Or excuse me, Sigmas are the threes.
Yeah, Sigmas are the fours because they have crack shot.
It's all four.
Okay. Yeah, the ace. I'm thinking of the test pilots that are the threes, right? So we have like very few instances of these ace style, like I force, even being able to get into the cut. And once they even get into the cut, then they're just oppressed by Boba Fett's I-5 and Slave One, that they really can't do a lot against it. Because even if granted, this is if Boba's flying well. When Boba flies well, it's just like the Phantom, when we're saying, we always say like Phantom, like D-cloaks. You always need to be able to have two D-cloaks, like left and right or left forward, available.
Right.
A good Boba player is doing the exact same thing. That every position he ends up has a way to, I can slave one and leave, or I can do what I wanted to, which was stay in the fight and keep shooting you. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And these lower initiative ships, like I said, maybe except for like the I-1s who understand where that they're moving first, but all the other ships can't really fight that if the Boba player is utilizing that every round to create those bait and switches. And I was talking about Kubo's game against the 5X1s. And that every time I saw Boba Fett, he always had one exit lane ready. Like, well, if you want to turn all your ships in on me, I guess I'll leave.
Yeah.
And but if you don't, you're just like, okay, cool, because I wanted to just one bank and keep following you.
Yep.
And like, man, it's gotten to a point to where like that's really oppressing either A, like slow ships, like B-Wings. Like I feel that like I've been Tendum and Braylon trying to fight a Boba Fett, and it just doesn't work because he just dips off. And he'll take that range 3 shot at you because you only have one agility. So I think that's what is really, I think, the problem with Boba Fett and how he is being successful right now is, I think, the Slave One title. Now, granted, it doesn't... you see a lot of times Boba's like flying along the board edge, right?
Right.
And he's lost that tool. Can't change his dial because it's either straight or like a bank, if it's anything, right? So I can't choose to the left. And that's normally when you see Boba taking damage, Boba getting swarmed up, and Boba probably losing if he's stuck along the board edge. He's the best flying just next to the asteroid fields and can cut in and out of them at need be. And I think that, now granted, we didn't see any Boba Finn, did we?
No.
In the cut, at least. Finn's apparently died out, because I think a lot of people learn to counter the Finn realm. That's not a problem. So we switched over to Kashka, Iman, Dengar, on these other tankier ships.
Yep, the more survivable, you can make an accident with me and not lose me ships.
Yeah, I can take a shot.
Yep.
I forget what game I was watching, but Finn Rao just like died to two wedge shots.
Yep. And he's gone.
I was like, oof. like, goodbye, 70 points or whatever. So I think that's been a key factor right now. What I was saying was that before, Boba Fett would have a big bid because he was just bringing Finn around with these more expensive fire sprays and jump masters in here. The bid has gone down quite a bit. So that's like to Marcel's point to where like, you could just outbid Boba now, right? Like 3, 4, 5 points, and you can probably outbid most of these Boba Fett lists. But I don't, personally, I don't like that bidding war. Because like, what do I4s do then in the bidding war, right?
Use every point. That's what you do.
Yeah, and of course, slave one makes the huge differences. And, you know, so the lists that are going into that bidding war are usually lists that have, you know, three, not even four. I mean, really, the bidding wars, they're either at two or three ship lists. And Boba Fett, the slave one title becomes less of a, it becomes less critical when you're playing against two or three ships. Where Slave One really becomes invaluable is when you're playing against 4, 5, 6 ships, where you might end up in the arc of a lot of ships, and you guys said it earlier, you got to bug out. It's like, you know, you got 2, 3 B wings that are gonna shoot at you, and no matter how many dice you're re-rolling, if you're at range one and they're shooting 4 dice, you know, they're still going to put damage in and you can bug out. So that's why Slave One is so critical, because and without the bid, because the ones that are taking a deep bid are usually only flying a couple ships, which then it's not that big a deal. You got a couple bruisers to be able to try to chase them down. Or if you're playing against something that has a lot of beef and a lot of guns pointing at you, that's when Slave One really becomes, you know, it doesn't matter how much you're bidding, because those lists usually have initiative 2, initiative 3, initiative 4, or in the Separatist case, initiative 1. And, you know, it still gets its money's worth. I'm not even going to say it gets its money's worth because it's only 1 point. But it still gets, you know, it gets the value. Most out of its usage, or out of, you know, what it does. So, yeah, you know, like William said, it doesn't really matter. The bid doesn't really matter. I mean, go at 200, it doesn't matter. The only time that where it will matter is if you have a mirror match, you know, against another 2-ship Bobalist.
All right. Now, Ryan, with you, I want to start another branch of this conversation. So let's switching again. We're focusing now on Slave One. So there's a lot of opinions as to how much it should be. Now there are other pre-maneuver changing abilities that almost all have a sliding scale. Do we think that maybe an answer is to create that sliding scale? Do we think if that happens, are we going to see Boba Fett with Slave One anymore? Like people actually using it? Because one of the things I noticed is that you don't ever see Slave One on any other fire spray, but that's because like the thought process is, why would I put it on anybody other than Boba Fett? Because I can put it on Boba Fett for 1 point. And that is that, you know, we see the Andrasta title on Iman usually, and I can't even think of what the other one was. Marauder.
Marauder.
It is Marauder. Okay, we don't see Marauder like anymore. We saw it for kidding, kind of in the beginning when people were just kind of messing around with it.
But, I mean, the key was that it was Han Solo.
It was a Han Solo.
Was
there
dirt
you go.
Cheap.
Mm-hmm.
As a slot changing. Mechanic there, like so, like let's. I want you to guide that conversation. Like, what are your thoughts there?
So, like, let's just look at some of the Bobas that were in near the top, Teemo and Kuba. If I told you you had to strip off Crackshot, like your talent slot, your mod slot, your bombs, and your illicit to keep the base Slave One and Maul upgrades, I'm pretty sure most people would. Like that's my base, and all these are just extra tools I can put on Boba that are useful but not 100% necessary. I don't think Boba just dies out if he doesn't have access to all those upgrades as long as he has Maul and Slave One. at current how Slave One works, it almost feels like it does need to be scaled based off of initiative value. It's clearly better on higher initiative than it is lower initiative. The unfortunate part is, like, Bulba is a very popular character. Mm-hmm. Slave One is his ship, right? Like, we don't want those pilots to just be, like, nerfed out of existence. It feels bad, right? You want to see these ships on the table. And probably going to see them in hyperspace a lot, if not, like, all the time. Because they want to market it to the average audience as easy as possible. So, I mean, was it a mistake back way in the start of second edition, if people recall? Slave One used to have a clause that said you receive a stress after doing it.
Yep, and it disappeared.
Could we go back to it? I feel like that would give a consequence to making that decision, and you wouldn't have to hike the cost of Slave One so high that Boba might would, like, it's on par with that conversation early on, also at the beginning of second edition, about Luke Skywalker Gunner, right? There's an inherent value to that ability that's so hard to pinpoint that line of, is this too good or is this so expensive that it's never going to see play? That's extremely hard to find. Even if you can find out a correct initiative cost value specifically for Boba Fett using Slave One, I might feel too concerned that, like, it gets priced so high that you never see Boba Fett using the Slave One title. Like, that's, you know, whatever. He's still at least there in a fire spray, but, like, it kind of feels bad, right? On thematic side, and people want to play Boba, and there's a lot of hardcore Boba fans. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it'd be nice if they reverted that, just said, hey, you have to deal with the stress now afterward. And that's an actual consequence. And you can cost that still based on initiative, but it's not like supernatural reflexes where, yes, it's an oppressive thing that needs to be costed that high, but that's because how the current mechanics allow it to exist. I've had a running thing where I would have wished that all the pre-repositioning maneuver stuff was not done when ships activated. It should have been happened in the system phase. Like, you want your pre-reposition action, you do it before anyone else reveals their dial, so you don't have that knowledge. That dramatically reduced the cost of those cards, because it's all about board state information you gain, and Boba has a lot of that.
Absolutely. And now let's go with your thought here of adding back that clause, which, by the way, if you actually own one of those first print from the system open series, if they added that stress on, that'd be valuable. But here's the Slave One dial, or excuse me, the fire spray dial. I think adding that stress in there really does change the way the ship moves, because I've seen so many times these players go, like, all right, I'm gonna put a hard two, nope, I'll just go the other way, right? I mean, it really would dramatically change the options that that Boba Fett would have. And I think that would be an interesting test, maybe before raising the points too much, would be adding that stress. I really like that. What do you think, Marcel and Will, adding that stress? Go ahead.
So a little bit on top of that is adding that stress. We see a lot of Bobas, like, their dials, because they count on their boost so much just to wiggle them around where they need to go, they just do all one banks or one turns. And they say, I'll pick my direction. I barely see Bobas use three banks anymore, because mm-hmm. if you need to three bank the opposite direction, that is a drastically different location than just one banking the opposite direction and choosing. So if you initiate the stress portion of it, you don't have the boost active to you unless you say use your contraband cybernetics if you have it upgraded.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's exactly the point I was going to make, is that, oh, I'm going to get over the... sorry, I got distracted there. Yeah, the stress, actually, that was going to be my suggestion as well. I thought that was crucial, like, for these dial-changing mechanics, right? We see it on... Seasoned Navigator as well, increases the difficulty of the maneuver, right? Which is essentially stressing yourself for the most part. Here's the question on that, though. The does the if you dial to one bank and you change to one bank, would you clear your stress then? You slave one before you do your dial, right?
I think it's. I think did it read maybe? After you execute the maneuver, gain a stress token? I feel like that's how it read.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, after you execute, yeah. Because I was like, well, wait, it doesn't really work on one bank some, but the power of that though is always like oh, you turned in. I'm out. Hard one boost. See you later. Or well, I plan to use my rear arc, but if you guys aren't even gonna come at me, I guess I'll turn around and just lock you then. Like that, it doesn't seem like a lot, but that extra action after a decision, so you actually get you start with four options, the three different boost and not boosting, right? And then you get essentially four more options. Right,
yep.
Going the other
Probably
way,
the opposite
and then
direction.
Boosting those directions as well, and like this, that kind of adaptability to board state is why, like, we got the pitchforks out against the handbrake Han, right? When we're like, well, Han's got nine different options at with perfect board state. Like, how are we ever gonna fight that? And then we hit it so hard with a band hammer, right? And yep. I still understand how that got. Assessed and corrected very quickly when it like was brought into the public and people were able to be successful with it. But Boba Fett's been almost like two seasons now. He's been just trouncing with the Slave One title, and I think Maul's interesting. We didn't actually see Maul on Boba Fett for a really long time. Everybody liked 000 or Perceptive or something like that. But people realize that very quickly that boosting should be your action with Boba all the time.
Just be in the spot you got to be in to not get shot. It's a good strategy.
Don't get shot. Get in range one. Get your mods the other way. So I definitely agree that there's it blows my mind that what's the change your dial Republic droid as well? R2A5 or something like that?
R2A6.
R2A6. Yeah, that also has no penalty for changing your dial, which is crazy to me. Like, I can't believe that those things made it into the game. Like, I thought that was the, essentially it's making dials not matter, which, I don't like. I like dials to matter. Like, it's taking away an essential part of X-Wing, in my opinion, which is the guessing, bluffing, and baiting with the dials, right? And when the game loses that, right, it's no longer X-Wing. It's just rolling dice at people.
All right, so here is another road we can go down here. I have firsthand heard an X-Wing developer say that dial-changing mechanics are, quote, interesting. Are they?
No, they're wrong. That's to me, that's the fundamental part of X-Wing. All right. If I'm trying to think of Ryan, you play Legion a lot. All right. And from what I understand about Legion,
some he says other, some.
some. you can choose to activate. I think Armada is the same way. I'm not as familiar with the modus. Don't quote me on that. But I believe you can just choose your units. So I'm going to be like, I'm going to activate these troopers. I'm like, okay, you activated those guys. I'm going to activate my troop transfer. I don't know, Legion. Snowspeeder. I know they got Snowspeeder. I'm going to activate my Snowspeeder, right? And kind of go back and forth choosing your units, right? And I would absolutely hate that style of play in X-Wing, right? If someone could be like, okay, well, I move my Boba. I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to move one Academy of my seven. Like, oh, you moved your Dengar now? I'm like, okay, cool, I'll move one Academy. But, like, what I'm trying to get is that, like, you're the bluffing in the dials is what gets you that like wow moments in X-Wing, when it's like, what, you called that? Like, how did you know that was gonna fit after my ships moved? Things like that, right? So I'm personally very much against it. They need to either here's a suggestion. No, it's crazy. What if Slave One did a damage to Boba?
Okay.
One same price does a damage. Do you think people would still be utilizing it? It's more of a threat then.
Yeah, for 1 point, you definitely would still use it, I think, because 1 point can give you, if you get out of 3 or 4 or 5 shots, that 1 point of damage is not, you know, it's a trade-off. It's homing missile. You're taking the guaranteed one versus a potential 3, 4, or 5 or more. You know, for me, I actually like that mechanic, the mechanic of being able to make choices at the time of when you move. Like, I don't mind supernatural in the game. I don't mind cognitive reflexes or whatever that's called, advanced sensors. But for me, there needs to be a, you know, there needs to be a cost to it. And Slave One, especially on Boba Fett and Initiative 5, doesn't have any true cost, not even points cost. But advanced sensors is a really great example of that. Like, when you use advanced sensors, you are, one, it's expensive, 10 points, and then you are giving up, you know, you're giving up everything else afterwards. You're saying, like, this is the only action you're taking. You're not taking any other actions. And you're done. And you can use it to reposition, to focus, or do something like that. In ships like, I don't know, in ships that get the free evade and things like that, like the Defender or the Naboo fighter, you know, you're basically giving up everything that comes afterwards for that turn. And I would assume in, nobody ever uses it and such, but if you were to use it on Whisper, for example, like, actually Whisper is a choir, so actually wouldn't matter with Whisper, but you get the point, right? Like, there's a significant cost, and you're not allowed to do other things because of it. So I like the idea of, like, giving it saying you're not allowed to take an action, and you get a stress. So some type of consequences for doing that. Okay, if you're pointing left and all of a sudden you're going to point right to avoid 4 or 5 shots, then go ahead and do that, because Boba Fett is an amazing pilot and he reads the field and he reacts. All of that is thematic, but doing so should put him at some type of disadvantage, puts himself in a corner, stressed out. Now the following turn, you know, he's going to be more telegraphed where he's going to end up. But there's a consequence to it. So I do like the mechanic. I just think that the mechanic should come with a consequence. Again, just thinking about it from a thematic standpoint. I don't know. That's just because I like it. I like what it does. I just don't like that you don't give up anything to do it.
Cool. Ryan?
Yeah, mainly just echoing what Marcel mentioned. Like, I'm more so on the side of, like, I'm not a huge fan of changing dial or the reposition. Like I mentioned, I wish the system phase was used more, especially for the repositioning aspect of it. Straight up changing your dial, that just deserves more consequences or much more real costs. And that balance of, you know, how the cost versus the consequence that you could have for it. Right now, with the mechanics that are in place, and as the card text read, there's not a lot of consequences, so points just go up, 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 or they should, but then you're looking at, well, now why does the card even exist? So, I know a lot of people don't like to deal with having to look at rules references just to make sure you have the right card text for a card you bought in an expansion. Doesn't feel cool. Especially newer players, you're like, oh yeah, this card does this. Like, oh no, but it actually does. This wording has adjusted and changed. So it, we've dealt with in the past, dealt with it even with Slave One. Technically, in the beginning, Slave One was with the stress. Now it's not. As Will mentioning Legion. Legion, I've actually realized, so I'm pretty new to it. I have went to the cards that I bought, and then I looked at the builders online and was like, wait a minute, these don't match. Oh, because they changed it. Got it. Cool. As long as most of your resources are pretty up to date on it, I think most belly aching will be pretty low on that. I'd rather just do what's best for the game, not just try to stay within these arbitrary, I don't know if they're arbitrary, but I feel like sometimes the I like that we can adjust point costs. That's really good. But I don't want to get the feeling that we shouldn't adjust some mechanics or wording to correctly balance something that you want to exist in the game, but can't find the right level of cost for them to stay as they are. So I hope FFG and the devs are willing to not dig into it often, but where it's needed. And I feel like it is needed for some of these non-consequence dial changing cards like Slave One, R2A6, even though we haven't seen a ton of R2A6 because it at least does have an initiative cost. But maybe we'd see a little more of R2A6 in general if the cost was a little lower, but it had actual consequences. I don't know, but I'd like to see more willingness, or maybe something was supposed to happen, but in our current world situation, the devs couldn't push anything out yet for an update, but we'll have to see.
It's very true. Yeah, of course, we do have an update coming in June. We don't know how big or small that's going to be, but we'll find out. Now let's go ahead and let's take a peek back at our list here. Let me go ahead and pull that up. I have a couple more questions for you guys. A couple more discussion things. Where'd the button go? There it is. All right. So another or a new trend, not necessarily a new trend, but an interesting build that I found in this top 16 that made the cut. So Octacon, we talked about him last time. He did another great showing, getting all the way to the top four. But William McDavid bringing another flavor of a Sloan Swarm. We did have one that was with a Decimator last time, and now we have this Scarif-based pilot. Why do we think that a list like this, I mean, obviously William had to have flown really well, but I mean, being able to go against things like Boba Fett and Imperial Aces, what's the key to success with this game, with this list, you think?
I think it's the high strength is that Sloan provides two different facets, because you get the debuffs with the double stress, right? And he's bringing 1, 2, 3, 4 academies as kind of throwaways. Exactly the four academies we saw in the Decimator build. But I think the stronger strength of Sloan right now is being able to double modify the offense against stressed ships. More and more, they're becoming stressed ships, either through linked actions, like silencers, interceptors, A-wings, all have some sort of linked action, or just standard K-turning, right? Like just for doing a red move to keep shots on people. That combined with a lot of guns is going to actually, I think, be the consistent damage that's pushing variants out, if that makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. And that's something that not a lot of swarms are being able to utilize, right? We don't see Hellrunner right now. We barely see Drea come up right now. So it's getting... And vultures have their own problems going on right now. But so we see less and less of that kind of generic double modifying that keeps your dice consistent and hitting the other ships. Now, I wouldn't want to speculate on the matchups or so, but definitely any kind of like triple ace, like Vader, Soontir, all those ships hate being double stressed. Obviously, the, we were talking about Boba Fett and Dengar loving to boost and do Han Solo gunners, things like that. So they're limited on what they can do as well. I actually see a couple different Sloan squads as I'm scrolling down. I'm looking through the people with four wins, right? People who just made the cut, to see what basically a Sloan Swarm could have taken down. And most of it is like, most lists have like a big dog in them, right? You have your Darth Vader, your Rear Admiral, your Boba Fett, something like that. And I think a lot of lists are using that as a crutch to have that extremely powerful ship in your build. And once that ship gets essentially taken out through like the double stress mechanics, not taken out, that's not what I meant. Having their offense and maneuverability reduced because of those stress is able to push them through and get them to swarm. When I say get them to swarm on something, meaning that putting it into a kill box, putting all your ship's shots onto a single target, and it's much easier to do when it is double stressed. Trust me, as a guy who was shooting a lot of stress in first edition, that second stress on ships can just take them out the next round, right? That second stress could be your downfall every single time. So I think it's ingenious, to be honest with you, and I'm surprised we haven't seen more Sloan make cuts. I'm not sure what's holding them back.
The willingness to fly it might be part of it. All right, we had a couple.
I don't know.
Go ahead.
The willingness. I Sloan's always on my radar. I'm always trying to see. All right, is the 7 ship, 6 ship, 5 ship, like ship count to pilots? What I can get? What makes sense? Do I throw a pocket ace? Do I get Soontir here with some guys in there? We've seen a lot of variations of Sloan, but I think as we've seen with this theoretically evolving meta that we're getting, Sloan is definitely a powerful piece. Some of the top meta pieces right now are Boba plus Thing or triple Imperial Aces, and that's not a lot of ships, and one of them being double stress doesn't sound good for them.
That's very true. It's very true. We got a couple of other cool, interesting lists here that also made the cut. He got knocked out in the top 16, but was 14th overall. We had Marco Tamalin had the top Republic squad. Marcel, go ahead and read that for me.
Jump into it. All right, so he had Anakin Skywalker with passive sensors and proton torpedoes. I'm assuming that's the Naboo fighter, Anakin.
Yes.
Skywalker. He has Wolfie, the Arkman 70, Mace Windu with Delta 7, and a Gold Squadron trooper with cluster missiles. I mean, Reddit.
What do you think?
You know, obviously Anakin with passive and protons has been used a lot, and it's effective. It's kind of an area denial, and he has, you know, he's a good tool. We know that he's a good tool because he gets the evade, the soft focus, plus the target lock. So that's a potential of 3 actions and a proton torpedo coming up at a relatively low cost. Wolf. We know, again, free actions, action economy. He gets the free reroll, extra dice out of the back. And good initiative, Mace Windu. Again, can potentially double action, triple action even, with double reposition or reposition target lock and still have the force. And Mace Windu's ability to be able to regenerate that force is really good. So all of those 3 ships are really effective, but it's definitely interesting that not only that he brought a Gold Squadron trooper, but that he brought a Gold Squadron trooper and decided to put the 6 points into cluster missiles versus potentially going with a bid with a 6-point bid or using those 6 points. I don't know if he has had any initiative. Probably not.
No. He could have spent the points on, quite a few different upgrades. Like, yeah,
there's a lot of things that he could do, especially Wolf. Wolf can probably benefit from an upgrade or two. But my assumption, my guess, is that Gold Squadron Trooper with cluster missiles is there, one, to be a target, but two, to really threaten the swarms, separatist swarms. So the cluster missile is pretty effective against separatist swarms at initiative one. And also, you can see in a list like this that if you're flying them in somewhat of a formation or at least close enough, most people will choose to shoot one of the other targets that
are the more quote unquote valuable pieces.
Yeah, the ones that are going to do more damage, which gives the Gold Squadron Trooper the ability to take a target lock without a focus. If you decide to kill it, well, okay, you just killed the weakest link. And if you ignore it, now it has a target lock that it's going to be shooting off a cluster missile at some point against a potentially valuable target on your end. So, so it's clever. I think it's highly matchup dependent, but you have to fly it really well, and you have to get a lot of things have to fall. You know, it's one of those, in my opinion, and no disrespect whatsoever, it's one of those suboptimal lists that you have to fly. You know, you have to outfly, or you have to have some things go right for you in order to win. Versus some of these other lists that have the natural advantage over most things that, you know, you need to make a mistake in order to lose. But I like it.
Cool. And the last list that I wanted to touch on here from the top 16 that is just a little bit different is this one right here. We had 5 TIE Advanced, the X-1s. 4 of them were the Tempest Squadrons, and Zyrtec Strom, Tim King was able to get into the top 16. Now, we were talking about it earlier. We saw the matchup on stream of Tim versus, I believe it was against Kuba, where these 5 TIE Advance had no chance in that matchup, just because the fire sprays basically never committed, and once the TIE Advance committed one way, then the fire sprays came in through the other side. But what are some of the things that this squad has, some of the tools that it has, that could make it a really powerful contender? And I mean, maybe we keep seeing people play this type of squad. Well, what do you think, Ryan?
So before Ryan, and I'm not going to talk about like the pros and cons for it, but just if memory serves right, he still had, in the game that he lost against the 2 fire sprays, he still had a chance to win. So he wasn't blown out.
No, it wasn't a blowout.
Yeah, Zyrtec had a 3-die shot on Eamon, so he needed a couple dice things to go his way, but had his running away TIE Advance not blanked out on defense, and he got 1 damage on Eamon. It would have been the other way around. So it wasn't a blowout.
Yeah, you're right. And in that game, I will tell you that there also were some dice swings where he definitely should have, Tim King should have had some ships that died sooner that didn't die. But, I mean, he was definitely in the match.
We like those green addies, though.
He did. Ryan?
All right. So I know Ryan Fleming, for a few months back or maybe even further, was testing out passive sensor advance, and he was doing all right with him. I don't think he took the 5. I think he took Vader and 3, so it was 4 ship list. Obviously Vader very powerful, so it's a different animal. So what these guys will do pretty good with is mostly against opposing ships, obviously, that have issue getting like fully modded attacks everything on the same target, because you can easily fan these guys out, and as long as you don't leave any of them out to dry, you're going to force your opponent to really angle in on one of them if they really want to commit their coordinated or focus fire onto one of them to try and burn one down. Because it is something that the Tide Vance player needs to be concerned about, is when they take passive sensors, they have no mods defensively. It's obviously helpful that you have 2 shields, 3 haul, and 3 agility, and you probably want to be on that range 3 engagement to try and make sure that you circumvent the non-modded green defense dice by just adding one. It helps out, obviously, than not having that extra one. So they want to be on that fringe fight and force their opponent to choose which ship they're going to go after. And then once they've found that out, the other ships can much easier commit to certain lanes where they won't be, you know, obviously at that range three anymore. They'll be closing in on the opposing ships. They don't have access to boost. They just got barrel, obviously. So they have limited capabilities to act like 5As against, say, swarm or formation box lists. Like, yeah, you can work your way around, but you don't have that speed to close in. If you're really trying to fan out and close in on an opposing ship, if you're not careful, you may end up having a couple advance out of the range three shot where a couple are in, and makes the opponent very easily decide that they can commit to shooting certain advance or going towards them, because you don't have that boost to cut in or gain some extra ground if you're trying to stay safe from that block or opposing formation with a couple of your advance. So, base stats across the board, it's obviously a good ship. The issue was the 2 attack dice, and you had to get a lock to make it 3, and passive sensors helped take care of that.
So completely side tangent, the chat wants to know who has the cuter shirt on today.
I feel like the Baby Yoda always wins, but I think we probably got our shirt from the same company.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Same style.
Do you guys remember Baby Muppets?
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about.
That's super random.
They were in daycare or something?
Yeah.
No. No. It's, man, they need to make a Baby Yoda TV show where it's just him hanging out with the baby versions of all the other
Star Wars characters.
Just like, yeah. Like, Baby Boba Fett would be all angry and be like, why are you so mad, Baby Boba Fett?
I just want my battle.
Exactly. Come on. They could do it.
Disney, we believe in you. All right. And actually, sorry, there was one other list I wanted to hit, and I missed it here. And I'm going to have Will read it to you with his sultry tones. Right now, it is one of the other interesting Imperial squads that made the cut and made it to the top 8.
Are we talking about
Sammy's list? Yeah, Sammy, okay. Petri, you.
Yeah, Sammy, you. I mentioned it just a bit ago, but that was a Seventh Sister, who's the V1 Inquisitor, who can spend both of her force to cancel one of your evade results. Fifth Brother, fairly new pilot with fire control system and homing missile. So that Fifth Brother's ability, very similar. You spend both force, but you add a crit. So it makes homing missiles 2 damage then. 1 damage and 1 crit. In that order, which is pretty funny. So if you only have 1 shield, you actually get his crit then. And then pairing with them is a set of I-4 Phantoms with crack shot and passive sensors. So there's a lot going on here. Mostly, what I enjoy is that all of these ships can just take target locks, right? And then hopefully utilize either the force or like like saving that lock and end up being able to double mod a lot of their shots. They're all I4 as well, so it's really easy to fly together and move targets around.
That flexibility is awesome.
Yeah, exactly. Especially with the decloak, you gotta do decloaks, then you gotta do maneuvers, plus the V1s love repositioning as well, so you gotta be careful with that. So, but if you just all gun in on something, right, you can get a lot of modified dice onto it very easily. And Fifth Brothers become kind of like the pocket ace, right? Like the true pocket ace for the Empire. When I say pocket, I'm referring to like a non-I5 ace, right? Like a low initiative ace out there. He can actually put out his damage very well. Because like Soontir, Fen Rao, right? Even things like Darth Vader or Whisper, right? Calibrated Jedi, right? Things with very, very expensive but very small health pool. They do not want that Fifth Brother at all.
No.
Not a fan.
Yeah, I would call it an anti-ace tool.
Exactly. Yeah. Because, the homing like Dengar is just like, well, I'll take two. Switch your force. Right? Right? But, like, Boba Fett probably feels about the same way. It was like, well, Boba Fett's going to be like, wait, how are you shooting me in range two? But same thing. Like, those are not for them. So I think it's very smart with the prevalence of these aces, talking outside of Scum. That's very useful. Plus, on the flip side, it does be able to fight I-1 swarms as well. You have good repositioning, good an action economy through the V-1s and the Sigma squadrons as well to be able to kind of get around to these big swarms. Problem with it, though, they're all I-4. So Slave 1 just demolishes this list, I assume. Like, I don't know how this list fights Boba Dengar. Like zero.
I don't know.
Yeah. Zero chance of that happening, I think. I mean, maybe. But like, oh man, those Sigmas are just going to get torpedoed out of the sky. It's going to be real bad.
It's kind of interesting because the points are there to make Fifth Brother's fire control system into passive sensors. So I guess I wonder why it's not passive sensors.
I can only assume that if they let you shoot the four dice, you have a follow-up shot. Also, if because he doesn't have passives, he might actually end up range one after the enemy moves after him, which means he won't want to actually spend the lock, so he can then say Talon Roll or something and shoot the homing missile follow-up. It basically lets him, so like you, once you get that first lock on Soontir or something, you don't have to spend the lock until it's dead.
Very cool. Well, I want to take a moment and say thank you to everybody who competed in the Space Jam tournament. Lots of awesome lists, lots of awesome people and games. We're going to jump into our list of the week. Here, we've hit that segment, and let me go ahead and pull up our notes so that I remember who is doing which list. So our first list of three, give me 1 second, let me hide behind the curtain. Our first list of three, if my computer will decide to move, there we go, is a, let's go with the Rebel list. So Marcel, we're going to have you go first. Here we have our Rebel list, and it comes from Optimus Prime 8200. So here is the brief from the player. It says, I've been tinkering with this for a bit and have been kind of on the fence. What do you think? And the list is Jake Farrell with Crackshot, Corin Horn with Proton Torpedoes, Fire Control System, and R3 Astromech, and Gavin Darthlighter with Proton Torpedoes, Fire Control System, and R3 Astromech. So built out the same way, Corin and Gavin.
Yep. So there you go. So obviously Jake is there. You have two fours and a five. Jake is there to pass the focus over to somebody else in case they need to reposition without stressing themselves. R3 giving them double target locks with torpedoes. Wow. So it puts out a lot of offense and it puts out a lot of critical damage. Now, obviously Cornhorn has a double tap ability, and if you have somebody in bullseye and you've got a good shot, so you're probably going to be running away. Where this list and E-Wings in general struggle is that they struggle in staying alive. Actually, you would think they do a pretty good job staying alive with three agility, three shields, and three shields, three agility, and thank you, three hull. But they really struggle to stay alive, and they really struggle to turn back around, because unlike other ships that are like this, they lack the reposition followed by the focus. They can only reposition and target lock versus reposition focus. So they're highly aggressive, not very defensive, and they will burn down. So I see this as like a complete office strike, just somebody coming in and trying to kill something and kill as much as possible and just basically kill things as fast as they can before they, you know, just it's a damage race. In this particular list, I see Jake not being that helpful, because again, the Corin and Gavin will both have target lock focus usually for their first engagement, especially if they have R3. And Jake is really only helpful if they're repositioning, so that way he can give them a focus so that they can reposition. But that's assuming you know where everybody else is going to be. So in order to make Jake more effective and make this list hit harder than it already hits, let's make the one ship change that we're allowed to make. So let's get rid of Gavin. And let's put a real heavy hitter, a true heavy hitter on there, which is a Wedge. Now, you knew I was going to go for Wedge.
I knew.
Yeah. From the very start, you're like, when you saw this list, you're like, yeah. Oh, Marcel's going to throw Wedge in there. But that's a true heavy hitter. But typically, I would put Wedge with regen and some other tools. But no, we're going for heavy handing. We're not going to regen this turn. We're just going to make you die before we die. So let's throw that proton torpedo on there. And he wanted double target locks. Let's put those double target locks on there. Now, actually, this is usually when I fly this type of list, I put Leia on there, like AP5 and Leia. AP5 to give Wedge the double action, and Leia to allow the K turn and still be able to shoot that second torpedo. R3 Astromech is kind of going to do that for Wedge. It's going to let him K turn, and then Jake is going to pass him a focus. So that gives him that right there. Now, that's actually a cheaper, and you end up with 192 points. I'm a big fan of regen, but you know what's better than regen is having those shields up front. So let's throw a shield on Wedge. Now, you can go ahead and throw a crack shot on both Corin and Wedge. He was at 200. This is at 200 as well. So you can do that, and that crack shot really comes in handy with Corin's bullseye ability. But I just, especially at initiative 6 and initiative 5, I do feel like that bid comes a little bit handy. So let's throw that crack shot back out of there. Again, if you face off against one of those 199 Boba Dengar lists, now you've got two ships that move after Boba, and you've got Wedge that moves after Dengar. So again, in this final version of the list, Jake is passing off the focus tokens almost primarily and exclusively to Wedge. Wedge is shooting his proton torpedoes at -1 agility. Cornhorn is finishing them off, and Wedge will have multiple Wedge will get both his torpedoes off no matter what, and Jake is just there passing off focus tokens, and eventually, you know, Jake will die and you'll be okay, you killed 37 points. And by that, again, this is a race to... It's a damage race. And this is a pretty strong alpha. Now, one final thing. It goes beyond... It goes outside of the rules from, you know, like, you can only change one, this,
right.
thing, blah, 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 blah. Luke, for the points, is so much better than Kornhorn. So you would typically, if you were going to a tournament, even if you're flying the same list, take Kornhorn out, put Luke in with a proton torpedo, and either, he doesn't even need R3, but if you want to throw R3 on him or even throw a regen on him, it fits. And that, I believe, is better than Kornhorn. But if you really bent, you know, really set on flying Kornhorn, this will get you a lot further. Wedge is much better than Carbon. Agreed?
Agreed. All right, let's keep moving down our list. Our next list of the week comes from Dor Oliver, in parentheses, Luke T, and this is a resistance list. And the brief here is, this is a list that I started and was thinking about on how to get Finn. Let me reread this. I'm reading this backwards. This is one that I started, and I've been thinking about how good and cheap Finn and Rose are in the build. And I wanted to build something jousty. So, they have Rose with Crackshot, Finn with Heroic Pattern Analyzer and a Perceptive Copilot, two Logistics Division pilots, those are the Initiative 1 pods, transports, both with Ion Cannon, and then Jess Pava with BB Astromech and integrated S-foils for a total of 200 points. And Ryan is going to take the wheel on this one.
So... I do think there's definitely more room to explore with Rose, with Crackshot or not. Finn, if he doesn't have It's the Resistance, should have Pattern Analyzer instead of Optics, if you have him in the list without it. Beyond that, so as the list is built, I wouldn't change anything. But I think there's a potential fundamental flaw in, yes, Jessica Pava is really jousty, but her supporting cast beyond that point, you've given the Logistics Divisions a 3-die attack, but it's a 3-die attack that can do a max damage of 1 and then control from there, which I will say the control elements do help Finn and Rose and Jess Pava stay on target much better. So I can see that. If you were going more jousty, you could even look at what was just ran in the Space Jam, which was, we saw almost this exact Rose and Finn, except I don't think Finn had Pattern Analyzer. And he, Brendan, went with 3 Heroic Red Expert T-70s. Even to that degree, I might say, hey, it's probably best to drop 2 of those to blue rookies, make 1 of them ZZ, and then you can get Pattern Analyzer on Finn. You're better off. That's if I could change more stuff in this, that's what I would do. But I don't think there's one specific pilot change or upgrade change per the ships that are in here that I would make. I think as it stands with what's available, it's the best of what it can be. Because each ship is pretty much taking its base upgrades to do what it needs to do. I just think that if you're thinking you want something jousty to back up Rose and Finn, I'm not sure if you're thinking jousty power, you're probably not getting it from the Logistics Division pilots. If you're thinking to help my jousty ships like Finn and Rose and Jess maintain a jousty fight because you're controlling the other ships, staying in certain areas, sure.
All right. And then last but not least, our killer Beard Hawk himself is going to take the next one. This is a Empire list. And this comes from Low Frequency or Low Frequency. starts at the Q and says, I like Echo, and she has all the goodies, and I really like crits for my opponents. So we have Echo with passive sensors, Fifth Brother, and Stealth Device. Then a generic Inquisitor with concussion missiles and passive sensors. Another generic Inquisitor with sense. And Vagabond in the TIE Striker with intimidation and proximize.
All right, so it actually took me a bit to kind of unbox this list. And obviously the creator of this list has a big focus on Echo. Even spent points on that stealth device. Now, I'm not going to touch that Echo at all. I have my own opinions on stealth device. But passive sensor is very good. Fifth Brother, gotta have it. So we're going to leave that there. Now, I didn't understand at first the Sense Inquisitor. I was like, well, that's not a very... I didn't really understand why the two Inquisitors were different, right? But then I realized that Sense triggering at I3 in the initiative phase could actually then provide information to Echo for decloaking, which I thought was very interesting. So I'm going to keep the Sense Inquisitor. I think that's interesting. We're going to keep that. Vagabond, while can't use that sense information in the system phase, Vagabond dropping that first proxy mine at I2, very much can use that information given to it by sense for his bomb drop after Aelirons, right? So that's pretty interesting. I didn't see that at first, but that's very useful information to have. But I am going to drop off the other Inquisitor. I don't think, I would assume he doesn't have three of these. You can go ahead and drop it off. Yeah, the nonsense one. I'm not excited about passives and missiles unless you're Fifth Brother. And then you should run that build. Also, a heightened perception Magpulse 7 Sister is very interesting, but out of the price range here because we're spending so many points on Echo. So at this point, I'm going to drop off Intimidation on Vagabond. I'm going to want them pretty cheap. I understand the what Intimidation is trying to do. You're coming real fast, coming hot, get a block, Aelirons, drop a proxy mine on them, right? I get that. But we're going to take those out for right now, just get them a little bit cheaper so we can sneak in some slightly different ships. Now, I believe Psy fits in that once we take off the Intimidation. Am I wrong about that?
It fits $199.
Yeah, so I'm immediately going to reach for, because Echo's so expensive in this list, I really want to start by reaching for a support ship, right? And Psy is the way to do it. You coordinate a focus, because Echo's not even taking focus actions. Could be very useful for the Inquisitors as well, or that Sense Inquisitor to be coordinated, say, invade, or maybe a focus-linked action, or like a boost-linked focus. Some interesting things there with Psy. But I don't want to run Psy without the title. I think it loses a lot of her value when you're not getting that double modified 3-dice attack out the front. So I'm going to drop Psy. It's just an option, but for a support piece and to draw some tanky fire to you. But when I started thinking about it, I was like, man, we got sense in this list. We got a little bit of area denial with those Vagabonds proxy mines. And all this talk about Boba Fett has actually let me, or wanted to reach for an X1 called Ved Foslo. Ved Foslo's ability says it's an I4, like you said, X1, just like Vader's ship. While you execute a maneuver, you may execute a maneuver of the same bearing and difficulty of a speed 1 higher or lower. So essentially, hard 2s become hard 3s or hard 1s. A 4K becomes a 5K or a 3K. Yada, yada, yada. It has the one of... arguably the best dial for a small base ship, by the way, with all the amount of blues you have and literally having every maneuver. You have every maneuver but one Talon rolls, right? So, and I'm going to put fire control system on them. There's a big debate going on right now about fire control system versus passive sensors, and I'm in the fire control system camp, clearly. So Svetfoslo is still I-4 with Echo, which is nice, so you can kind of fly them so they won't bump into each other. But Svetfoslo can take that information from Sense and use it to better maneuver himself, whether it's doing the three-bank blue or the hard one, the things that aren't on his dials. I think what it's really going to do is the I-3 concussion missile is eventually going to run out of steam. Eventually you'll run out of those concussion missiles and then you just have passive sensors. Svetfoslo is going to be your second ace in this list, if you will, and be able to track ships down. And man, if by chance Svetfoslo is moving last, he is unstoppable out there between everything we were just talking about Boba Fett, right? There's a huge difference between a hard one bear roll left and a hard three bear roll right. There's about 1.5 to 2 ranges of space between those. It's pretty insane. So that's where I would end up. I'd keep the Vagabond, keep the Sense, and throw in Svetfoslo.
Fantastic. So as we close out here, we want you guys to go ahead and vote for your favorite list of the week. The poll should be popping up today, right there on the screen. 1 for Ryan, 2 for Marcel, 3 for William. Hopefully you guys enjoyed our show today. Hopefully you enjoyed the Space Jam. I know I really enjoyed putting it on. Thank you to everybody who helped out. And again, not this weekend. So we have a couple of weekend streams. This weekend, Saturday, starting at 9 p.m., we have our Lego A-Wing stream. We're actually going to be giving away a $100 gift card. There are some conditions to that $100 Lego gift card. What? Yeah. I'm building Legos. You got to make it Legos.
Well, like actually, like physical Legos? Like you're like...
Yeah. Clicking the A-Wing together. I am building that on my table. Should be fun.
Respect.
It should be fun. I have just a couple of mini games in there. It's gonna be some fun hangout time for sure. You lost my train of thought. Yeah, so this Saturday, 9 p.m. is the plan time right now, Central, for that. Then the following weekend, we have the L.A. Space Jam. And the weekend after that, we have the Sydney Space Jam. So we have tons of content coming your guys' way. Looking forward to seeing you guys. Don't forget, every Wednesday we have our League Night, which we have our upcoming stream this Wednesday. Thursday, the Gold Squadron Paintcast, which shout out to Luke Carrington, because you see those cool animations? None of that would have happened without Luke teaching me how to use the tools to put it together. And he set me free, and I went crazy and had just... Obviously, for those of you who are watching, got a lot of fun and a lot of joy out of making those. So that was great. And of course, those of you who are watching live now, we have Monday nights, our podcast. And if you watch later on YouTube and you want to interact with us live, be a part of the chat, watch us on Mondays. It'd be great. So for everybody out here at Gold Squadron, thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Gold Squadron.